tonight I have the distinct pleasure of welcoming back David Spare and Orly as well to this space. I'm very happy to note has become something of a tradition for us and them to have this talk once a year. We've always been impressed since that first talk and every subsequent talk. David is a good friend. He works in a tradition very different from our own Tayu Fourth Way tradition that the store is based on. But he brings the authentic work here, and we always are grateful for that and value that. So thank you so much for coming back.
It's my pleasure, really. I think the best way to begin is just to have a silent meditation for about 10 minutes, just to feel into the formless. It's a great joy for me to be back in Sebastopol at the Many Rivers bookstore. I always appreciate the great welcome I receive from Stuart, Jim, and Rob, the open-heartedness that I feel from them. And because of that open-heartedness, I also feel to give the same back. I like to welcome you into an informal, a casual relationship that's not based on any kind of spiritual stereotyping. In other words, there's nothing that you have to become internally. There's no preparation that you need to make in order to make yourself available for what's happening in this instant. Except to give your attention as you would to anything that you cared about. To me, care is the most essential component to entering into real spiritual practice. Above all, spiritual practice is not a mechanical procedure that you do over and over again in the hope of attaining some result. That may be a tiny aspect of what goes on in spiritual practice, but it should remain infinitesimally tiny. Instead, I'd like to point you more to the direction of the heart, of abiding in the heart, the consciousness that is represented by total feeling. To point the attention there, and then to let attention be absorbed into that beautiful feeling, that feeling of total caringness. That really is what spiritual practices are about. They are an invitation for the total being to invite with utter care the immeasurable. Spiritual practices, or sadhana, are methods to be performed in an attitude of innocence and love, to welcome that which is uncircumscribable, that which has no boundaries. It defies the intellect to know exactly what that is, and that is why spiritual practices are, in fact, modes of surrender. Surrendering into the easiness of simple functioning. That's also what meditation is. In that surrender, in that ease, there's a spontaneous cognition of that in which the mind is embedded, that which gives rise to the mind. That swift and sudden glimpse is the essence of God realization. It's the essence of realizing one's own self. And through repeated merging or repeated dissolution of attention within its source, in that process enlightenment is found, what that word points toward. So in order to answer the question, what happens after enlightenment, we first had to answer this first question about what is enlightenment? How does it happen? What is its nature? How does it come into being? And I think I've answered, or at least posed a few ideas about how that occurs. Metaphorically, you could say that sadhana is also as a means of welcoming the ultimate reality, analogous to preparing a guest room for a guest. Only you're not preparing for a temporary guest, you're preparing a guest room in which the immortal comes to stay, something which never leaves. During spiritual practices, we gain and lose, that is, we have a temporary guest coming into our cottage and staying with us. The immortal will appear to come and go. That's because the room hasn't been set absolutely perfectly yet. So what we do is symbolically we return to that room and we re-prepare it. We continue our meditation, our sadhana, our spiritual practice, whatever method we use, in the hope that we arrange everything so beautifully that somehow when that bliss comes the next time, it chooses of its own volition to stay. Not that it has a mind of its own. Remember, this is only a metaphor. So accept this merely as a metaphorical way of looking at things. Because if you don't, it's going to all sound like contradictory nonsense. So when you have been inspired through a temporary transcendence, a breakthrough into self-realization, you are then more consumed within the very process of your surrender to make that room more beautiful, more ecstatically beautiful, so that when the divine comes the next time, it actually begins to stay. It stays. Remember, we're actually making this room now. We're actually making this room in which that most precious state of being will emerge. Sometimes the present tense can become too unbearable and we have to move for whatever reason. As the preparation to make that room so beautiful becomes our whole existence, something incredible happens. There's a total displacement of attention. And that itself is a metaphorical statement. Because you can only utter metaphors when it comes to describing what the total divine looks like when it establishes itself in your life. You can only resort to metaphor, poetry, images, suggestions. You cannot hold this thing down with language. That final explosion that we cannot talk about is what awakening is. It only happens once. And even that's an exaggeration. Even that is a quantifiable error to say it happens once. The enlightened condition is, metaphorically speaking again, a self-generating fire within total being that is self-illuming, self-generating It is the self, but pumped up and expanded with its own presence. And that expansion is, without question, in a very real sense, the destruction of the entire world. It's the incineration of the known. Whereas prior to enlightenment, one was established in the discursive mind only, after awakening, one is established in the non-cognitive or precognitive essence of being itself, the absolute sense of being as transcendental consciousness. And so that should give you some intellectual taste of the gravity, the profundity of what happens in awakening. But when we are talking about a guest that stays forever and never leaves, as we are with total enlightenment, we're talking about something that really does push language to its limits and my ability to even express what I want to express next. When you have a guest come and stay forever, it ceases being a guest. You can only notice that guest as temporary. Noticing only happens with a temporary visitor. When the visitor decides to stay, the initial shock of their arrival begins to fade. So nirvana starts to begin to look like everything that nirvana is not. In other words, the world starts to appear again. Why? Because you're still in a body that has experience. You're still in a body-mind that goes on living in time. And so even that permanent guest, that absolute guest is so polite, so tactful, so non-intrusive by his, her, or its very nature. In fact, it could even be said to be a non-existent permanent guest. By its very nature, it does not cover up anything, including the presence of an external world. And so you begin to see the relative domain again with the guest intact, but you don't know that. That's only a conclusion that the mind is forced to reach based on what it's been through in its memory of sadhana to actually accommodate that great being. It remembers the effects that happened along the way. It sees a kind of change in being, and then it induces or deduces that there has been a permanent shift in consciousness. Just feel the energy in the room now. Don't wander. Pay attention to me. Look at me. Study me. If you study me, you'll see it. Only that is functioning. Still rise up in waves and re-eat relativity even after it's let it back in. So it's kind of a white shark guest. It's got the quality where it can just start eating things out of nowhere. In other words, it eats up your relative domain even after it's re-established with the guest. This sounds like crazy talk. It is. It's more than that.
It's the bearing to witness of what is, of what that is.
Come into the energy with me now. Come on in. I'm opening this door, and I want you to come in with me. Even if you think I'm crazy, even if you think I'm deluded, give me the benefit of the doubt and open your heart. See what happens. Because in your attention, you have total capacity to understand this without any spiritual practices in an atmosphere like this. Based on what I said previously, you must know that I am not anti-spiritual practice if you listen to everything I said this evening. But I'm also going to qualify that and say, we don't need to make spiritual practices a precondition for understanding and absorbing this reality. Not in this atmosphere. So this guest has remarkable prowess. Once established, you forget it. The world comes back in, but then it can arise at any great moment and redissolve everything. So what is life like after enlightenment? That's very similar to what it was before enlightenment. It's exactly the same. Except now that you have the capacity to really love without obstruction. Meaning your love force is centered back into the totality of being. And in that way, a possible, at least theoretical, reorganization of the world that appears to be very much immersed in confusion can occur. But not from fiddling with the world, as object. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about from the platform from which there is no world, and then the reappearance of the world. Then the appearance or dissolution of the world, and then the love force that is simply carried in the time-bound, space-bound vehicle. So we're talking here about the reconstruction of human reality in the end. It's about you as human being. It's not an abstract spiritual concept. It's not about the fulfillment of some religious agenda, some church's agenda, some monastery's agenda. It's not that. It's about the radical force of love coming to bear on every instant. And not even the alignment with the intention to love. We're not talking about aligning or playing with ourselves anymore. We're talking about simply this intensity surviving to such an extent it takes over everything, but still your hand is present to touch. Your eyes are available to see. And there's a different type of touching and seeing that go on at that point. That's all I want to say. And I hope you can taste the benediction of that descending energy. Or ascending energy. Or simple awareness. Any questions? Any discussion that you would like to have? Let's go.
Talk about opening the house for the guest. And I feel that. I feel that. But there's a part of me that wants to know more about that. and that just may be me, but I just
know about what specifically?
Making the house ready for the guests, so that the guests will stay for longer periods of time.
The guest is looking for the feeling of sincerity in your preparation, so that your heart is really present. So if you go into the guest room where the guest is going to stay, when you move something, you move it with real love and attention, and then you just place it and you leave it. And you do that to everything. And then it senses the kind of dwelling upon of energy that you're offering that room, and then it starts to come. Yes.
This is my first time seeing you or hearing you. And I guess I would just like to hear a little bit more about your personal experience.
Ask something very specific for me. What do you really need to know?
What do I need? I guess...
Then I won't answer.
My friend and I are having a conversation about reactions and being reactive to things in the world. I guess I'm wondering about that experience and how it relates to this.
You can still get angry. You can still get angry. When you see, for example, in the awakened state, you see injustice. You see abuse of human rights. You see invasion of privacy. You see the destruction of children. You see the destruction of women and women's rights. You see all the torture that goes on in this world. Once the guest has taken hold, how do you view all that? Well, it depends on the extent to which you've cultured mental, emotional, and psychological sensitivity in your relative awareness. So do you still get angry if you see injustice? Do you still react? It depends on what your personal parameters of acceptable behavior are. So if you really don't care about women's rights and you read an article in the paper, no matter how awakened you are, you just go by it. It doesn't mean anything. But if you're on the front lines of women's rights and then you read that same article, something in you might spark. You may say, oh, wow, amazing that this has come into my attention today. I really feel moved to do something or to communicate about this topic. You see what I mean? See, there's this very naive notion that when you become fully enlightened, you become unreactive to everything. That's a profound misunderstanding based on false teachings.
I guess there's such a strong value.
Repeat. I didn't hear you.
There's such a strong value on equanimity.
Yes, there is. But we don't want equanimity to become numbness, do we? So at what point does equanimity, in the name of non-violence or in the name of non-reactivity or witnessing, as the Hindus would say, when does that become anti-life? See, equanimity and disequanimity happen only in the relative being. They don't happen to that. So it doesn't matter whether you get upset or not. If you're really enlightened, you've let go of it all. You're willing to even put your life out for someone based on something that you really feel moved to accomplish. What did Jesus say? The highest thing is somebody who's willing to give his life for his friend, right? He didn't say the highest thing was going into Mahasamadhi. He said reactivity was the highest state. When you're willing to show reactivity in the highest state, that's the highest state. When you start exhibiting what I call the force of radical love, it could mean standing in a picket line. could mean anything. This is my work. I'm not a political activist, although I do talk about politics occasionally, as you may have heard. Have you been warned? You will be. You will be. By all the equanimity worshippers, they're terrified to be reminded that it's okay to be human again, because they're very conditioned to think that they have some relationship with the guest. The guest owns you. Once you're occupied by him or her or that, you are the property of the guest. You don't exist anymore. So there's no chance that some little action here or there, sinful or non-sinful, could readjust your relationship with that almighty consciousness. Nothing can touch it. Are you with me? Huh? But for a good reason you're not with me, because you're an ecstatic, right? You're an ecstatic yourself, right?
I call a bhakti path.
See, I knew you very well. Just never met you before. I knew you're an ecstatic. Bhaktis are all into the ecstatic merger into the beloved, correct? They're not interested in the cool, unmanifest. They're interested in the hot, pleasurable relationship with the divine being. Hot and active. Huh? That's why I don't get too many people, because I'm a little crazy like that, you see. People want to come in and be lulled into nescience, spiritual nescience. They want to be told, you never need to feel again. I will help you kill your ego. You will never, ever react to anything again. You will be in total undisturbed peace till the end of time. So for people who are craving that message, to me, they're people who want to go to sleep. Right? So when you hear David, you're hearing something that you'll never hear anywhere else. I don't model myself after anybody. Which really seems to get to some people. Which I love. That makes my day. Are you with me tonight? You see how easy this is? Good. By the way, before the guest can come in and live inside, you have to live inside you. You can't be yelling, the mind can't be yelling to the emotions, clean the pans and wipe the floor. You know, everything has to be set in order inside before this can really come to be. That's the great value of paths which quiet the mind and which bring you to total equanimity. They get you to the place where you can get into a fundamental condition, a condition of fundamental radical concern, which is being itself. What is the nature of being? I think people need to become passionate, not go to sleep. I never tell people to just back out of active existence.
Attachment to
that attachment. So sin becomes renamed attachment. Right? Attachment is bad, attachment is dirty, it's what's making you stained. Therefore you clean up by becoming totally non-attached. Now the sins have been forgiven, and now you're going to be accepted by God. It's all the same trip. From tradition to tradition. Look, you didn't like it in Christianity, right? That's why you turned to India. But don't do it on Indian terms now. You either are stainless from the beginning or you're not. You are pure and perfect from the beginning or you're not. That's it. Now, if you choose the latter, if you're not, then you should rejoin Christianity because that's their teaching. In Vedic Hinduism, you are that. Whether it's bhakti, jnana, raja, or karma yoga, it is assumed that you are the supreme identity of the universe to begin with. And only that will be awakened. So don't do guilt trips on yourself. And look, you need to taste non-attachment also. You need to understand what it means to be so blissfully free that you can walk down the street and see people dying in the gutters and not give a hell one way or the other. That's part of spiritually waking up. You need to become that profoundly detached so that you can give your whole and entire being to that which is the guest, what Rumi calls the guest. So see everything. See the whole picture. Absolute detachment, absolute hunger for God. Don't say it's either one. That's the approach of a fool. I say taste everything, become everything. Just feel me now. You should be able to feel me. You're a bhakti? You should be in bhakti heaven right now. Huh? All this passion and uninhibited expression, this music that I communicate to you that's in back of my being, I'm in a state of music all the time. You know, they sing outer bhajans, but the inner bhajans are singing me. The inner mantras have gripped me. Everything I say is mantric. You may say, oh, that's well, good and fine, David. You have such an exalted opinion of yourself. But I put the taste challenge to you. Come and stay with me for a while and see what happens to you. Are we in bhakti heaven yet? Tell the truth. You're grinning like you are. Yes, you are. And what does it taste like? Tell me this taste you're having now. Give me back a little. I've given you a lot. Give me back something. Don't worry about betraying your guru. Nobody's going to say a thing.
It's just very freeing.
It's very freeing. But also, is there love? Is there love? Yes. Just freedom by itself is like lukewarm water. You can't do anything with it. You can't brew tea. You can't drink it. Doesn't taste that great. You can't boil pasta with it. Someone else. That was beautiful.
I think that the greatest thing that I have learned is how to say no. It's not just K-N-O-W, it's in there. Not to others, but to myself.
There's no in this, though. I can tell you there's no N-O right now. Mm-hmm. There's a total allowing, total yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Everything that you wanted to be cautious about with the use of that no is allowed here, exonerated, and you taste the fruit of the bliss that even you may not want to engage. You don't even have to do that. Even that's a step.
Thank you.
Can we ask about experiences we've had with you?
Anything.
Last Tuesday.
Speak loud.
Before last Tuesday, when I signed on to the internet to see you, I felt something I'd never felt in my life before, and I've not followed you closely, but I've always been with you and with my father, and I've always been in this type of religion. I'm saying things right, but I experienced something that I'd never felt before. Before, I'd only felt things here, and this time it was my whole body, all the way through my toes, my fingertips, everything just blew out. And it was like a vibration that's not of this earth, and a color that I'd never seen before that I was inside of. And it was the most insane, beautiful, sickening feeling all at the same time that I didn't know what to do with, so I simply just sat there and let it happen.
The sickening part is just some purification that's happening within that.
I felt it was me trying to control, or
yeah, exactly.
Just making me, like, trying to stop myself from
exactly.
vibrating made me.
You were trying to hold yourself down. It's scary when this kind of huge thing appears. Especially, you've not practiced anything, right, formally?
Not formally, yeah.
Well, there.
I've been floating, waiting for you.
That's right.
But it was an incredible experience. And right directly afterwards, I felt nothing. It was really weird. I thought I'd be different. And then as the days went by, I just became happier. Every day after that. Happier and happier and happier.
That's the fallout. You know how when an atomic bomb goes off, then there's the fallout?
Yeah.
You got the atomic bomb, and then 4 or 5 days, the blissful ash begins to fall all about you, glittering in gold. That's good. You've had your wonderful awakening.
First one.
Yeah, thank you. I live to do this, so my gratitude is all flowing toward you. If you don't report things like this, I get the feeling like my teaching is a failure. Tremendous. I'm delighted. Namaste.
I was in a dream, and I'm on an archaeological dig, and I'm standing on a cliff, and I'm looking over the edge of the cave that I came from. And I look, I said, no, it's not on top anymore, it's been covered over, it's way down here. And as I saw the cave, I heard a voice. It said, oh, so you're Billy Sue. And I turned around, and there was nobody there. And I was no longer on a cliff. I was standing on a sand dune, huge sand dune. And I looked around, and the next thing I knew, I was skiing on a sand dune. And I said to myself, wow, you can ski on sand the same as you can snow. And I said, but I don't know how to ski. And I turned and looked, and before me was the Milky Way, just spread out. And I went back, and I just kept skiing.
Still skiing?
Still skiing. Yeah. Still skiing.
By the way, it's so nice to see those of you who have come back, the people that I only see here once a year. I really am very warmed to see you again and to feel your presence in this reality. Tell you one more secret. After the guest has moved in and owns you in the house, you spend the rest of your life helping other people prepare their guest rooms. they'll say, oh, come and see my guest room, David. I walk in, and I'll look, and I'll say, no, I don't like that statue there. Put it there. I think the guest will really enjoy it if you put it there. Are you sure? I just have a feeling. So they say, okay, and they put it there, and then I get an email saying, David, since you told me to put that statue there, the guest came last night. What else do you want me to do? I said, put it back to where it was now. Now you can put it anywhere you want. The guest must be happy with the way all these books are laid out in this store. Everyone must have been put in with total love because it's here. So don't be confounded when, after all your mystical experiences, the world returns. No matter how much satori or samadhi you get, unless you intend on just dying at the end of your accomplishment of self-realization, if you intend on living a little longer, you come back to a world. What is so confusing about that? And in that world, you will be loving some things and detesting others. Like and dislike continue in the state of enlightenment. If it didn't continue, you wouldn't know even what your menu was at home. You wouldn't remember the food you liked. I noticed that every awakened being continues to eat what they like to eat. That means memory is functioning. No matter how high they go on the level of God realization, if you call them by their name, they look. Hey, Baba. They look. That means memory is functioning. That means ego identification is there. What turned and looked? It wasn't the absolute. The absolute is hairless, it's visionless, it has unknowingness about it. It has nothing in it. It wasn't the absolute that looked. Right? When Nisargadatta puffed on those cigarettes, getting that intense nicotine rush that he loved, it was the physical cells of his body getting high off that puff that he loved. It was his addictive personality enjoying that tobacco. All in the relative. There was nothing absolute about that. Go tell that to all the Nisargadatta devotees. They all think he was nothing but the absolute. He was a chain smoker. And I'm not putting him down when I say that. Everybody has bad habits or good habits. Maybe that was a good habit for him. Maybe it increased his devotion. People are weird, you know.
There are so many teachings. You know, they say the world, they make no bones about it. They say the world does not exist.
Right, but he's saying that in a room.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying that wearing clothing. No, listen, you've got to deconstruct those people. Like I said in the beautiful question you asked me on my video on the internet, the one that's on YouTube now, Forgiving the Teacher. That's your question. You brought this beautiful topic up, and we discussed it for a while, remember, in
mm-hmm.
Sonoma?
Oh, certainly.
And what we, I think, both agreed upon was that the teacher really needs to be forgiven radically for being a person, for showing up in a human body. Because along with that human body comes all kinds of foibles and things which are somewhat unconventional or very unconventional. It's like pulling one leg of a table. The other three legs come along. You can't just have one leg. Everything comes along with a human being. We all are addicted to something. We all have a tendency toward addiction. Right? We all have nasty qualities. And we have beautiful qualities. That happens even in the enlightened. I've met enlightened beings who are absolute ignorant. Great beings that are respected all over the planet behaving like an idiot to me. I'm not going to mention any names. There's no need to. Shameful. Shameful. What do? You forgive it. You just forgive it. You just say, look, they're not God. Even though they are God, you say, well, they're not God, really. You know, you come to that place where you're willing to really make an adjustment with the way in which you judge anything, and you're careful. Even with yourself, you're careful. There's the words, and then there's that which is beyond the words. So listen to both. If you do, you'll get total perfection. Most people want to kill the words and get the merely transcendental perfection. But you get to come back to the field of words and hold on to your beautiful realization so that you can come into the field of duality and make a mess of yourself and not regret one iota. It's not about coming out clean in the end. It's not having an immaculate and shiny image that everyone's going to worship as God. It's that through all of your moods, good and bad, the shiny divine is brilliantly lighting everything up, and it makes no judgment about anything.
It seems like enlightenment swallows all of the relative world.
In its temporary phase, in the culmination of its temporary movement. Go ahead.
And so it's like all of those things that we see as, you know, necessarily, you know, not so great or wonderful are completely swallowed as well.
Everything. But that, again, is in those deep phases of self-realization or oneness. But then again, what will happen is that when the guest becomes permanently embedded, it starts to fade, because just like if you had somebody sitting on your couch, you'd notice them for the first day, but if they just went sitting there, you just start ignoring them. You just walk, you won't even talk to them anymore. You say, well, I guess you're staying there forever, right? So then you just go on, and you'd eat, they would sit there. You wouldn't make any more fuss about it. And your mind would begin to forget that they were there. That's exactly what happens. Even in full enlightenment, the absolute has come. At first you're saying, whoa, oh my God. And then what happens, though, is that your relative functioning begins to creep up into that and function in it, so you no longer notice it anymore, because the relative starts to happen in the absolute. And then you have nothing to say to anyone, because you just say, well, can't you see it? It's obvious. It's here, it's there, it's everywhere. It's not much of a teaching, but that's kind of how you feel.
Like some of those teachers who didn't say anything. And nothing to say.
Nothing to say. But then people say, well, that's what enlightenment looks like. Hmm. And they say, well, if you're not behaving like that, if you're not silent all the time, then you must be a hypocrite if you're even talking.
But even some of those talk sometimes.
Even, well, maybe one or two didn't. They wrote on blackboards or something like that.
That's just silly.
So... any other questions? Anyone I haven't met that would like to introduce themselves at this point? How do you feel tonight?
Very gentle.
Very gentle? I could be yelling and this gentleness comes out. It's very strange. It's very psychotic.
Very hot and peaceful.
Hot and peaceful. I like to go around
There's
the room.
There's more coming. Yeah. Every time you point at me, something new happens.
But no, maybe from some... like. Hot and gentle. Give me a couple of words and we'll go around the room just for fun.
At this moment?
What other moment is there? At this moment?
I mean,
are you giving me several moments to choose from?
Yeah, choose about a half hour
You've
ago.
Used up your time.
A peaceful, quiet.
Peaceful and quiet?
Love?
Yes.
Ecstatic and expanded.
Ecstatic and expanded?
Very strong.
Very strong.
Playful and cool.
Playful and cool.
I feel like I want to taste something. I want to taste something.
You want to taste something? I like that. Let's leave that mysterious for now. Yeah.
Energy.
A lot of current,
yes.
Vibration.
Yeah.
That Shakti. You're getting Shakti initiation this evening.
Uh-huh.
Beautiful. Yeah. People struggle for years to get these things. You get them in one evening. I've always said this is the greatest teaching. What's that?
Not really sure.
Okay. Beautiful.
A little energy here and a little bit of anxiety.
Anxiety? Okay. That'll go.
Cool and open.
Beautiful.
Expansion.
Quiet.
I would say peaceful, bright, intellectual, and a little nervousness as well.
Little anxiety?
Mm-hmm.
That's because of that intellectual thing. Yes.
Like a effervescent, soft ocean light.
Of light, okay.
Like a fairy wing.
Okay.
Expanded in a heart connection.
Heart touched.
Yeah.
I think I'll stick with freedom.
All right. That's the first freedom.
Be curious.
Okay.
Stirred up.
What was it?
Stirred up.
Activated. Okay.
Sort of a delightful shattering.
I won't. Well, I'll stop there. Just to be polite. See, this is one of those things where duality gets the best of you. Unless they want to talk, they can talk. And I've also kind of put them on edge by saying that. See, now I've given a decision. Now if they don't talk, they're saying, well, see how this happens, how guilt happens and all of that? It's unbelievable.
That's terrible.
It is. It's awful. As soon as choice arises, you're finished.
The image that came up for me was of a fragrant tea. It's like a high mountain duo.
That's what we sell here.
We just happened to sell that one. I love oolong tea. I think green oolong is a good good choice, actually.
This is definitely green oolong. Fragrant.
And one of your tea tasting events, they're coming up soon?
The next one is a week from Saturday.
Okay. So obviously, a bookstore like this that is even embodying a particular spiritual practice and still feels like it can open up the doors toward dialoguing with people who are perhaps even iconoclastic, if I can use that word, who don't really affirm any lineage of teaching, I think that's very brave, and I think it's good to support a store like this. You're lucky to have a store in your community that will bring in all kinds of people like this. It's very, very wonderful. I wish there was a store like this where I live. So I hope you support these guys and the way they support you. And let's see, it's... What time do we have till?
15 minutes.
Okay. Does anybody need to go into anything beyond what we've already covered? Is there anything you feel we need to actually peel back? We can do some very delicate work now if you want. The atmosphere is very clean. Something that you have been hung up on in your spiritual practice, maybe we can shed light on that, open something up, some little place that needs a little dusting or something.
What is it?
What
is Dharma?
What is Dharma? That's a philosophical question.
Well, when you were asking what happens after enlightenment.
Oh, then say that to me. Don't just say where was Dharma. I mean,
where
I'll point you to all these books if you're not careful. Read them all.
I mean, one person who's awake will be political or something. One person will be depressed. Another person will be, you know, dancing up in a cave. So
follow it.
Is that just choice?
Follow it. See, what you will be in the end, you won't recognize. You won't know it. You probably won't even want to be it. Understand? You'll be living way at the edge of awareness. You're not in the place where the mind has all its strategies gripped around you. You're pretty free. You're looking out into this emptiness all the time. So you're here and there, you know. You're in the absolute. You're in the relative. You're enjoying both. And whatever you do at that point is right. You don't worry too much about it, especially since you can't do anything other than what you're doing.
Just watching?
No, I wouldn't say just watching. I say I just don't know what that is at the end. Otherwise, if you say it's just watching, then people are going to try to stay in the position of watching in the end. So I want to be careful, see? That's why I said I want to do delicate work now. We're not going to name this. Yes?
If you seem to have been born with certain abilities, and as I go down this path and become more enlightened or have realizations, would that mean the destruction of those abilities?
Only during high phases of intoxication, of spiritual intoxication, do you forget everything, including your talents. You may abandon things for a while. Or you may not. It depends on what your dharma is. Some people will take their spiritual realization and put it right into their practice, right into their talents. So they can break through, they can get their breakthroughs while they're doing whatever it is that they do in society. Those are karma yogis. You can do it. You'll be told what to do. You'll know what to do. You won't be able to do otherwise. You're giving birth to this realization, so it's going to start creating conditions favorable to its emergence. It's radical. Very radical.
I feel that as you're saying.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yes, it's beautiful.
Thank you.
So you become beautiful. You're innocent like that, right? You don't come in with all these things I have to challenge. Your heart is available, so this impacts upon you immediately without any time. It's beautiful. Very good. And I'm just babysitting. I'm not doing anything, if you want to know the truth. I'm just entertaining. No, go ahead. No one else is talking.
Well, I met you a great many years ago. My dad's
I remember.
Followed you, and I've actually followed you through him. And I've always, since the first time I met you, had a very... I can feel you all the time. I can hear you. I can ask you. You're there. You're very playful. This is in my mind. I'm no way saying for anybody else. But I feel you all the time. It's wonderful. And is that just for you, natural? Or do you know that that's happening? Or is it just part of the expansion, this curiosity, this question?
Is it beautiful? Quotation from one of the Vedic texts. It says, the self will choose whoever it wants to reveal itself to. So you've been chosen. It's nothing personal. That great love is nothing personal. It's just that it has come through some tremendous grace, benediction of grace. At first, it's a temporary guest. It'll come and have tea with you, and then it'll leave. And you'll say, oh, no, don't leave. You say, you don't understand. I have to leave for now. Then it goes, and 3 weeks could go by, or 3 years, or 3 decades. And then it comes back for tea, and you say, where have you been? Well, I have a lot of work to do, Pete. But here I am again. And then it keeps on returning until you're transformed into the permanent awareness of it. Which is a great mystery, and that's a metaphorical proclamation. There's nothing literal about that. If you want to understand what that means, then get a book on Rumi and start reading, and he'll explain the details. or Kabir. So you're in this darshan now. Can I describe it that way? It's beautiful, huh? Don't worry, I'll always be with you. And if I don't look at you, I know you want me to keep looking at you. Nothing will be lost. I'll come and I'll go until you get duped into total realization. Then you'll be confounded, not awakened. Then you'll be walking down the street really, really... I won't say. Don't see me as different. See me as your own self. Don't see me as other. That's not conducive. Don't think of me as an object. See me, feel me, know me as your own self. I know how you feel. I know just how you feel. What was that? Something about bullshit?
Oh, wow.
She must be talking about the mainstream media. Huh? You sure you want to put this talk on your website? You'll have Homeland Security banging down your doors. You'll sell me out, Jim. I know where he is. If we continued like this for another 2 hours, you would get so intoxicated, it would be unbelievable. That's why I offer intensives. So just like he has tea, I have intensives. You can have both. You can buy the tea, brew it, and bring it to my intensive.
Horrible combination.
Any last question or concern? This is great. There's such love here now.
I just want to talk about tea.
It does sound good, doesn't it?
I just want to share that through the years of knowing you, I've struggled a lot with how I was raised, what I learned with the examples I was given by my parents. And today, it's like this profound, almost... I've been wasting my time. It's so simple. But I also know that all of the therapies I've done through the years have brought me also to this being able to taste what you offer so innocently at times, so deeply. I can't, there's a word and just lost right now.
Okay. Well, this was a great evening, and I'm very, very happy that you all came. Thank you so much for coming and for making it a wonderful evening.
That was wonderful.
Rob, I'll do that.